Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. This is hour 323 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we get started, thank you, James, from North Wales, Pennsylvania. We all appreciate you for paying to keep Michael's hours hosted on the web.
So, yeah, thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, James. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hello, the man who had his knee operated on 20 days ago.
Yeah, 20 days ago, went in and chopped out the old one and put in another one.
In about an hour.
In about an hour, yeah. My surgeon said he did thousands of them. He did about 1,000 with the newer prosthesis, and prior to that, the older prosthesis that didn't have half sizes. Like shoes have half sizes. At one time, shoes didn't have half sizes. At one time, prostheses didn't have half sizes. So they fit better.
But you
and because of that, I'm up and running. Went dancing last night.
Dancing.
Yeah. Went around, did a couple waltzes, a cha-cha, and some salsa and stuff. Practice and warm up. Get my knees. These are really good exercises. Because they get your muscles in areas that walking doesn't, you know. Mm. Yeah, you got to keep limber. Soft knees means a lot of tension on the knee. And that puts to work all these muscles that have sort of forgotten how to work or ever terribly abused in the operation. They've come around quickly because of having some pre-surgery, you know, preparation in terms of stretching and post-electromagnetic field therapy prior to the surgery and also after the surgery. So that speeds everything up. The healing process goes real fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an amazing, amazing, I guess you might call it an amazing invention with Nikola Tesla, electromagnetic field, pulse electromagnetic field. The idea of using that and finding it that we are not just purely, you might say, chemical beings, you know, because of pharmaceuticals. We're actually electrochemical beings. Our bodies can be actually stimulated to repair itself in absolutely supernatural nearly ways. Things just are way ahead of schedule. It's 20 days I'm dancing already on the dance floor.
And what does your doctor say about that?
I just joked around and said, "You're doing okay. You're doing okay." No, you're doing really well.
Good.
Yeah. That's what he said.
Good.
He didn't want to say I did right out of the bat. How are you doing? He knows I do that. He knows I do pulse therapy. And he also realizes that pulse electromagnetic field therapy is very good in stimulating bone growth, which is part of the healing process too, you know, because they chop away your bone, take out the actual surfaces of, they literally saw it off, you know, kind of gross. It's the idea. Mm. Anyway, that's enough for wonderful modern, I guess, medicine. And I think that's one of the things that has,
I mean, it's almost more mechanical than medicine.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's like more like a carpenter's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah.
Maybe your doctor used to be a carpenter.
No. He wasn't used to. His father was also a physician. Yeah, sort of in the family, kind of.
I know a doctor who used to be a carpenter.
Yeah.
And he's
you
still
didn't
making boats.
follow your father. He's still making votes. Yeah. You didn't follow your father into dentistry.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I did for a little while, and but things could have been quite different, but I didn't take that road.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that was almost literally robbed from the human race was the following of the Father, our divine Father, which is really the key to our destiny, which is nearly stolen from us through very sophisticated lies that were generated by one Lucifer, the devil, essentially. And this whole thing about UFOs and aliens and the devil are very intertwined in the culture of ufology today. Many of them are, looking at demonology, a study of demons. This study could have been a lot to do with devils and demons. But I was wonderful to have been rescued by, you might say, given the journey to discover that much of it, in fact, the majority of what's going on in the universe is really divine. It's not at all full of lies. If you want to know about lies, just look at our politics today. Very sophisticated lying going on. Yeah. The devil was called by Jesus Christ the father of all lies. And he indeed is. People who literally can take vows, a vow of servitude can be given many of the techniques and trickery to be used to be able to lie with very sophisticated, even beating lie detectors and stuff. Anyway, that's just a matter of how we're trying to unwind truth. In fact, this is where the Shaharuns, those 12 destiny guardians that were all dressed in purple, these were so, you might say, stifled by the techniques of lies and deception in the world that has, led the human race down pathways of absolute self-destruction. Like in showing me on the walls as I went into their temple, you might call it a temple, which is like a giant nautilus shell with on the walls of the spiraling in, you'd see man's humanity to man. The Jew is being thrown into pits, dead bodies, and just as if they were just trash, things like that. And that was to forever etch into me the relationship and the request that they had was to help stop the madness of the human misinterpretation of the purpose of life. The purpose of life is not so that one race or one ethnicity or particular cultural group may have absolute power over another and have dominion over them. It's quite the opposite. It's to have a type of servitude and brotherhood, and that reflects the divine entanglement, the divine brotherhood. And this entanglement is really a wonderful way of a mixing oneself with other people to the point where there is this absolute understanding of personality and people, the idea of being able to interact with other people who may not even understand, but are willing to interface. That is really an important thing, the willingness to interface. So anyway, I just went on that direction of a little bit of conversation here. I can follow along, but there's some things that you might want to have bring up right now, Curtis.
Well, I thought, you know, you mentioned following our father, and Paul Simon wrote to you. And
yeah, he did.
And I thought we could read that. This was 24th of August. Paul writes...
I had a lot of typographicals to Paul. I just hacked out the email back in response to him. I'm glad you reread it to me and we could make the corrections.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure everything was there. Yeah. So Paul Simon wrote, "Hi, Michael. Hope all is well with you and the knee operation." And then he goes on and he says, "This passage from the Urantia book has me scratching my head. In your opinion, what do you think they mean when they say, if the sun be lifted up, S-O-N, if the sun be lifted up, then of course, how will all men be drawn to him? Thanks for everything," signed Paul J.S., and he gives his, I just said it just a moment ago, his QRL, his KK4QBS.
Yeah, should be proud of having accomplished that at his age, to have gotten that license. Pretty hard to take, you know. It was even harder at one time. You had to know a lot of Morse code. It's like a foreign language.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing people didn't have to pass that test to be able to purchase an iPhone.
Yeah, you have no marketplace.
No one would have any.
Have an iPhone.
Why can't we sell these things?
Yeah. Well, you have to take a test. Oh my goodness! Nobody wants to have that. Yeah,
and here's a book to study. Well, he wants to know, if the sun be lifted up, what did that mean in the Urantia book, right?
Yeah. Well, what did it really mean? That was a question to ponder, because if the sun be lifted up, he would draw all men unto himself. That's also a quote from scripture from the Holy Bible.
So. Well, you wrote out a kind of a lengthy paragraph. Let me go through this. So you say, "Hi, Paul. The Christian church has often taken the stance that if the gospel of Jesus Christ be lifted up, it will draw all men unto himself. This is only partially true in the divine sense. First, in our universe of Nebanon, we have a father-centered rule of the divine adjuster. Thus, the father fragment, or thought adjuster, is identified by this most central and divine characteristic, the impersonal nature of the father. So we have been given a relationship that is most difficult to build without additional help. It is also known that if any man has seen the Son, he has seen the Father also. Thus, Christ's statement that no one can know the Father except it be through him, Christ. He also said that no one can say Jesus is Lord except it be by the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit in the present state of Christian teaching is a solitary element of the Godhead, but the Bible also states that in him Jesus dwelt. The fullness of the Godhead bodily. There is one nature of the Holy Spirit that is personal. It is said that the Holy Spirit shall not speak about himself, but shall speak about the Son, or more importantly, speak as the Son. This is the Son actuating nature of the Holy Spirit that works with our human nature to build the divine nature in us. Thus, the new creature is created in the nature of the Father Son through the Son Spirit nature of the Spirit of Truth, in partnership with our nature and the Divine Adjuster. We now are made complete in Him who is the fullness of the Godhead bodily in our human body or nature. As a result of this, we can now participate in the divine nature and build our everlasting soul. Signed, Aloha, Michael. Well, that's really nice that, you know, way back in one of the recordings, Michael gave out his email address, and some people wrote it down. I believe you only gave it out once. And that's how some people have it, like Paul. So thank you, Paul, for sending that in. And we also have seen your other emails, political nature, about Hillary and all the craziness around that.
Yeah. I was just mentioning to you, Curtis, just mentioned it in this show, is that the father of all lies is another name for that Jesus Christ gave the devil, or you might call Lucifer himself, as the father of all lies. And of course, we prefer, and the angelics, the celestials, prefer the Spirit of Truth to the father of all lives. However, we're mortal. We're mortal beings, easily led around by our nose, you know, deceived easily or unwilling many times to see truth. Sometimes, I remember, you know, trying to feed my pet cat. I got a pet cat. He's so intent on wanting to eat a certain thing that he just keeps begging for it, which is basically nothing but a particular kind of canned cat food. And finally, I say, okay, I take a scoop of it and I toss it down into his plate, which is in the back of him. And he keeps begging and keeps begging. Finally, I say, you know, it's over there behind you. No, I know. I finally got to grab him by his head and put his head right in front of the food. And he goes, oh, there it is. You know, you ever have that happen to your cats? Mm-hmm. They're kind of like totally impervious to your directions until you finally put their face in it. And then they go, oh, it's wow, how wonderful. Well, anyway, that's sometimes how things can be with us. And the truth can be pushed maybe many times in our face and we don't see it. But ultimately, if we contact and allow the structures that are given to us, the additional help, and the biggest, of course, was the fact that on all of the universe's planets where beings of finite origin, mortal beings, exist, the millions upon millions upon millions of worlds. It was upon planet Earth, Urantia, that the universe creator became a mortal, the lowest level of creation, the first level of scaffolding to build the eternal soul, the eternally living being. And that privilege is almost like, you know, always been, you might, on this planet, allowed to go the course of us, ourselves, discovering the pathway to truth and enlightenment. And gone many different directions, ultimately finding the central source. This may help build upon the following question which Kathleen had, but ultimately the central source, first source and center, which was my cry toward heaven, toward God, that he make himself real, or send an emissary to give me the truth, and allowed for me to ride that trip with Tan and Nella right to the New Jerusalem, grand ship orbiting Saturn right now, where celestials of many, you might say, stages of development, as well as the highest of all. You know, when you look at the Verondadec Most Highs, as well as Melchizedek's themselves, but the Verondadec's, the Most Highs, who are allowed to affect their affect the destiny of, you might say, the kingdoms of the planet, the destiny of nations on Earth, they can actually change the destiny of that by interacting with different, you mean, different situations or things, are domiciled there. They actually live there. And it's an amazing thing to have been given that privilege. But trying to bring that back and then bring it back in a, you know, a form which is palatable, believable, is a challenge. And that's where the Celestials wanted my help, to try to give it that touch of normalcy, you might say. It's not so out of the realm of our normal life. Much of what goes on, that's why the conversations that you could have with other celestial beings would be very similar to our own conversations one with another. In any case, the whole pathway we build and we live is to build this relationship. So take time out of one's life to continue to build that, in type in what would be considered worship. That is your communion between what you, your conscious mind, the divine adjuster, and through that spiritual, in, you might say, ignition, which comes from, you might say, a extraplanetary source, which is the divine or the spirit of truth, which gives insight and personality to that relationship, a, you might say, a more full and divine nature. And from that, you may actuate amazing things that are outside the you might say, the realm of the material plane in which we reside, and have real and tangible results, both in the material as well as the spiritual. And this is the Marantia plane of our soul, and which bridges both, and actually is an element of reality that is gifted to every human being who desires to build it. And many times we become extremely successful in terms of...
Okay, we're rolling again.
Ah, okay, forgot that I had my phone on hook yet, so people could call. That was my daughter anyway. She just wants a ride from the airport. Well, anyway, continuing on. And these, it's like this relationship too. You know, we can butt in on it. Our you butt into a conversation, you might say. Many times there is a unconscious conversation going on between ourselves and our adjuster. Remember, there is an impersonal connection going on. And that impersonal connection needs to be maintained. But at times we can, you know, allow our personal will to, you know, get put in a telephone call, you might say. I remember songs that we used to sing in church, A Telephone to Glory. And that, you know, the idea of calling up on God, calling in on Him, is real, is absolutely real, but it is developed through practice. And that relational practice runs the course of continuous proof that it is true. In other words, ask what you will, and it will be done for you. And it will be proof that you are making that contact with the divine. And I'll go on more with this, with the Agandanta question that came from Kathleen, which we'll discuss next. And pretty much, you think, as far as coming with the ideal of what does it mean to have the sun lifted up, you draw men unto him, or draw the universe unto himself, was the complete ideal of coming into personal relationship in the lifting up process. And it is a process that could have been stolen through deceptive lies and distractions that come from being a being of mortal needs. In other words, temporal mortal needs which have no eternal consequence, no internal importance, many times can divert a person's choices away from really the real one, the important one, which is to build the eternal soul. And just to come to that conclusion many times takes a person sometimes their entire lifetime to realize that's what life was all about, you know. Yeah.
It really can't happen.
But there are people, let's look at a very public figure, Donald Trump. He openly said that he was very greedy, wanted to make a lot of money, and he did quite successfully. But also hearing the divine guidance, in other words, there's a good brain, you know, which our brains are not just solitary instruments like our computers running offline. Our brains are actually meant to be online and have consult with the divine. Our brain is an instrument of receptivity toward the divine voice, the intellect, the intelligence that is unique to the human mind is well able to interface with the divine voice. And in that interface, we build so much success in our lives, and it'll be directed in our lives in various levels. But we need to be able to understand why they were developed. And I believe this guy, Donald Trump, actually realized that he was actually being developed for a particular purpose and pulled under a core of human individuals. These are the mortal core of destiny, people that have many times only been developed for maybe one small thing or another. But this particular element is to make a paradigm shift away from the influence of the impersonal instrument of finance by actually having someone not influenced by finance to be allowing for sensible rule, you might say, a type of divine, allowing that to come back in. He openly admits that he wants to see things like prayer back in school, and things that were just stripped and are, you know, basics of the grand American experiment. I was having a discussion a little earlier with Sharun, and he said something very simple. He said, the United States was made to become the envy of the world, that it would pattern itself against the relationship between the divine freedom, the freedom that is offered to every individual to pursue happiness, and then to also succeed in attaining happiness by allowing themselves to be influenced by the tools of the divine nature. But it is often times that the envy goes so far as seeing the banquet table but never being invited to the banquet, that once finding the way in, one seeks only to feast upon the things upon the banqueting table and not to know the environment that made it possible to exist in the first place. In such, individuals that have been perverted by imperfect knowledge often will find themselves at loss, never being able to truly acquire what they so much want to. They must drop those things which are false and only pick up those things which are true. This is the choice that is put upon every sentient being in the universe. So you can see by what he was trying to explain was that they don't hate us. They want what we have, but on their terms. Not on the terms in which allowed for the creation of the prosperity and the creativity and the informational, you might say, advantage that we have, that comes from the inspiration, that comes from God. And that is something that I often wondered about. Why is it that many of the wonderful creations and inventions find their way back into the USA, United States of America, and then from there they propagate outward? It's because of the influence of the divine allowed into the society and then to embed itself into the various personalities, human beings, open to the flow, the inflow of knowledge and creativity. This guy Donald Trump, a human being, was allowed to get very rich, to break the back of the control of the extremely rich, which were to distort the destiny of the planet if they are allowed to run its full course. And I know that it is not something that is absolute that he will become president of the United States. I was given a dream and shown a wall. And I think I described that dream at one time, which it's in a southern place, perhaps Mexico, and had to run north with a friend of mine who also was a friend who came forth with another dream years ago, back in 1980-something, 86 or so, with a dream that said they were gone, the towers were gone from New York, and he was the one that gave me the first insight that the towers would no longer be there. And it would mark the beginning of a very important end times of the influence of planetary destiny, the end of our own destiny. And that would mean either the fall of humanity or the ascent of the human race toward a more perfect enlightenment, which I believe is going to happen eventually. Good. And it has to go through a breaking. You might say that some of this Islamic slaughter that is going on under absolute confusion is to awaken people to the confusion and realize that sometimes even religion can go mad. Mm-hmm. And it has over. But the masses of people out there are still looking at the divine source and hoping to make contact. And this challenge is something that is on, on the challenge of every human's soul, the very, destiny. This recent guy that got caught was the bomber, and they shot him. He was on the stretcher, and he looked puzzled.
I saw that photograph.
Yeah, I saw the photograph as well as the video. He looked puzzled. He looked like, I did this. Why am I not feeling as if I'd done the will of God? done the will of Allah. There was none of this assurance. It was like, something's not right. And many times in human life, they can get like this, a friend of mine, that very same guy who showed me the dream, told me about his dream and not seeing the towers. The towers were gone, the Twin Towers in New York, the World Trade Center, they were gone. He had, at that time, already been a millionaire three times over. Millionaire once, he said, well, I lost it, made a mistake, you know, start all over again, millionaire again. He says, being a millionaire, Michael, you don't want to be a millionaire. It's easy. I can show you how, you know. No. You just play big, you know. And that's true, you know. No. And then I showed him Christ. And he said, Michael, thank you. Well, anyway, and it put it together to him, for him to understand it beyond what many times the religions of the world become encapsulated within a culture, and it kind of lose the message. Ultimately, the message was for his divine destiny, but he was one of the individuals that actually had a angel of light come right through his window, his hospital window. He was almost near death. He crashed in a preliminary run in the Indianapolis 500, and it was the opening scenes many times for the agony of defeat, you know, in terms of sports. And it showed this crash, this absolute awful crash, and that was him, his car tumbling and rolling, and you know, but going into all kinds of gyrations. And same guy. He had a tremendous experience to just have known this guy. But anyway, yeah, is ultimately pointing, like, people actually find it. Eventually they realize, just getting a, you know, the next big deal or the next big experience is not what life is all about. And there is a higher purpose. And many times people find out what it is. And they are like on the challenge. And that challenge is, well, for this guy, Donald Trump, was like hearing. It's not vanity that he wants to become the president of the United States. It was because he realized, you know, he sat under one of the greatest thinkers or preachers or teachers of positive thinking, Norman Vincent Peale, from his childhood. And I remember being under the guidance of Norman Vincent Peale through tape recordings and things like that. And I would often fall asleep listening to Norman Vincent Peale's at night. You know, they wanted me to have positive thoughts in my life. And Norman Vincent Peale would be played at night. I put my earphones on. They were only, I didn't only wear earphones to learn Morse code. But it's powerful, powerful, true teachings. And a lot of it is the divine advantage that we have been given to this planet to take advantage of it and build it. And then once you build it, many times it was built for another job. And that job, of course, is to be shared with the planet, and in one form or another. The inspiration of this, of course, coming from the first source and center. This was an interesting conversation I had. We can move on now, maybe, to Kathleen's question, which moves into the Agendanter question.
Agendanter, yes.
Yeah, Agendanter.
All right, well, she sent this a couple days ago. Subject is questions. Hi, Curtis and Michael. Hope everything is fine with you both. Michael, I'm so glad to hear you are healing is progressing so rapidly. So glad to hear that your healing is progressively rapidly. Michael, I've been thinking about the talk that you gave last week on the Agendanters. Podcast 322, starting 32 minutes, 28 seconds. And I'm hoping that you can elaborate more. Can you share with us more on what he said about God and the nature of reality? And when you mentioned that you weren't sure if he was sentient, was he stone-like? And she ends, love and joy, Kathleen.
Okay, Kathleen, thank you for the question. And apparently, by the drive of the Spirit of Truth, the infilling of your question is being developed right now. Right now, the second part of your question was stone-like, or why did I wonder if he was sentient? Well, first of all, was my physical my view of his physical presence. It was about 7 feet tall, of a rather lanky like build, you know, more like a slim build, not heavy build, like the other guys who are like heavy, 8 feet tall, heavy built, big muscles, like kind of like a bodybuilder style. But the Agandante was just walking there. I was sitting with my guide, which is this little guy. I described him before, and he said, "Oh, an Agandante." And I said, "What?" It's hard to say, you know. And I said, "You have to go and you have to ask him your question." My question was, "Is God real?" Is, you know, my feeling was God is absolutely real, and you know, and we'll ask him, you know. So I said, "Okay," I got up with him, and he stopped the Agandante who was strolling past me on the Great Hall. This is like a huge walkway, and which at times are filled with alien beings, the celestial beings. And this time he was in the crowd, tall, slender built, and he had appearance like a moa of the Easter Island moa. Yeah, very tall head, but he had what looked like a small cranial structure dome. The cranial dome is seems small, like, you know how we're talking about the virus, the Zika virus, and mm-hmm. It causes the children to be born with a small head.
Oh.
You ever see the pictures of how these kids look?
No, I haven't.
Well, they're all face. There's no head. There's no cranial structure behind them, you know. That appearance seemed to be that way because he was all face. And although his head was quite big, and we took measurements of his actual, perhaps volume of his cranial would be the size of any human being. It's just that his relationship of his structure, his brain or cavity seemed small. So I thought I would be talking to an idiot. You know, I thought I'd be talking to someone that to be guided around who wasn't all there. So the idea of sentience was he all there? Was quickly vaporized as soon as he began to speak. When I asked him the question about the reality of God and does he believe in God and why? And he came back quite poignantly, point blank, and he says, "Of course, there is all evidence that that God should be and is. It's plain. Do you think that you could even think and ask such a question if there be no God? What do you think ordered your mind to think? What do you think allowed your thought to reign so free, to be able to be engaged in such an ideal? Is there a master of reality? Are you so foolish as not to understand what you can see plainly about you? Look about you. This all be without a central source? My goodness, this is by no happenstance. This is indeed reality that is fundamental to a source. And that source, of course, is your question. Why should we even care? It is, and always will be, real. God indeed exists. Why do you question such an obvious thing? Said the young Andante to Michael. That's pretty much what he said. And I looked at him. Boy, did I thought I'd come on like beep, 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 beep. You know, not a happy, somebody that didn't have half a brain. But I was wrong, you know. This was indeed a philosopher and challenged my very, very fundamental structure and belief. More than belief, it was built on observation. But did he have to see God to believe in the first? He saw the evidences that many times are placed within the range or scope of people who are entangled within the natural environment, and many times make the mistake of worshiping the creature more than the creator. In other words, they actually, in science, is a form of worshiping the creature more than the creator. In other words, you look at concepts of evolution, the sophistication of life, the interaction of elements and chemicals, and you study the very fabric of reality, and yet deny the existence of the central source. And that is fundamentally a big problem in the essence of the elevation of true wisdom and the structure of observing real soul building, the purpose of life. And as people go on in their lives without that guidance, they do eventually come to a point many times in discovering ultimately the very same statement. It is obvious. There must be a first source. There must be a central source. There must be God. So this is what the Agandanta told me. And his conviction was absolute. There was just like absolute. There's no question about it. Why should you even question it? This is the Agandanta. The one who sees, the one who believes without even having to see, yet he does see, but he sees it in a way that is filled with already being convinced that it has a first source. We eliminate many times our curiosity and discovery by looking toward that question and saying there is no source. Just discover. Let's just discover. And ultimately, we begin to look at patterns and realize order out of chaos is not easy. And to come with this amount of order out of such possibility of chaos is indeed order. This is another challenge that the Agandanta said to me. Just the concept of thinking of nothing is something, indeed. If you think of nothing as being nothing, then you must think. Do you ever wonder where such thought originates from? Is it from you, or has it been around for always? Indeed, you must realize just the idea of nothing is indeed something. It is the essence of the source. So these kinds of things that the Agandanta came forward with to me challenged the ideal of fundamentals of his belief system. He didn't need a graven image. In fact, that was why one of some of our crippling things of graven images or concepts of deity worship that perhaps cripples us. But also the idea of demolishing artwork as graving image is perhaps another crippling aspect of our progress higher toward beauty and toward truth. Because one of the aspects of what we appreciate as beauty many times is the, you might say, the interaction and entanglement between divine source and our expression to look at it as beautiful. And this is where when we look at beauty many times, we find it in so many things that find itself arranged in such a way as to emulate divine order. One of them is symmetry and balance. Mm-hmm. Symmetry and balance. Music and its scale is order, not just tones and sounds. We find notes and we find music as beautiful because there is a certain order. Why does it have that? These are all part of the discovery that we are on a journey with. But the Agandantar's challenge to me was, even when it comes down to coming to nothing, is something. Indeed, just to have the idea or the concept of nothing is indeed something and a confirmation of a first source. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's a little bit of the answer to Kathleen's wondering what happened between my interaction with the Agandanta and him with me. I was surprised that this guy with, you know, basically a really long face and didn't seem like he had a big, you know, brain case. Yeah, like a small head, but he had a brain.
Did all the Agandantas look alike? Because he said, "Oh, there's one right now."
Well, no, there were a particular coming out, I believe, out of a particular class. Where it was arranged, there are many classes going on. I was in the class which, outside of the class, had only one burning bush, you might call it, the Marancha tree. But every class, some had 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, okay? So I'm not sure what class he came out of, but every one of them were all students. So it's part of, you might say, the New Jerusalem classes that go on in the New Jerusalem, made up of different orders of celestial intelligent beings. And I happened to be in the first grade, which is the right place.
That's a good place to start.
Yeah, yeah. There's probably so much more to discover. And we have to develop. One of the things that I remember that Dana said, I said, I wanted to stay because I had so many more questions. And it says, there is more that you will learn on earth and better than you would learn here. So living life is so much more important. And to live it, especially engage with what I described earlier in terms of the divine nature, the attainment of the divine nature, and living it as a human being of a, you might say, mortal origin, just an ordinary human being that has a biologic structure and but has a truly divine destiny. That is probably the biggest schoolhouse that could ever be arranged for a transition between the mortal origin being and that of a truly divine being that we are, our destiny is to become, you know, a fully fused son of God.
Well, I heard from a fella who wanted to get another copy of The Coming of Tan. Listen to this. He says, hello, Curtis. Riley's books left? He says, wow, I'm surprised you and Michael are still doing your recordings. I've been reading the Urantia book regularly now for almost 10 years. Wanted to thank you for introducing me to it. Truly an amazing book. So Michael, he is thanking you. So I moved to Israel for a few years and lost my symbol. Now these are symbols that Riley made, and he says, I think I may have left it on a wall, on a kibbutz, on the border of Giza. Also, some chick stole my Coming of Tan. It was so weird. She asked to borrow it and never gave it back. Even when it was in the back seat of her car, she was unable to let me take it out. She would make excuses or just flat out ignore me. I didn't want to break into her car or anything for it, so I let it go. Do you have any more? And he ends with, glad you're doing well. You probably don't remember me. My email address was jddoe@hotmail.com back in those days. We corresponded a few times. Keep up the good work. Signs at Chaz. Yeah, I remember him. His name was Charles. And it's just another one of those stories that, yeah, someone borrowed my book and didn't give it back, or wouldn't give it back, or he couldn't get it back. And so I wrote to him and told him that, yes, I have some more, and hope to hear from him again. Well, Chaz, nice to hear from you again. And that happened. I've heard that story so many times that someone's borrowed the book and he can't get it back. It is a really different book, that's for sure. Something I had to do. And I'm really sorry Riley's not with us. He was really tough to, deal with, or he didn't fit in on this planet very well. He didn't care about anything except drawing symbols and staying put. He didn't want to go to New York to be on the Stern Show. One time it was the 16th of December 2006, and Howard Stern was leaving WXRK, and we did like a farewell thing on a stage out in the street. And then Howard was having us go to, what is that music place called? Anyway, go someplace and have a few beers and something to eat. Nope, Riley didn't want to go. He wanted to go home, and he didn't even want to go. Mm-hmm. Oh, come on, Riley, you have fun. No, he didn't know how to have fun. When he came to my house here on the river, he never said, oh, this is great, I love being here. Nothing like that. He just wanted to come in and lay down. But he was sorry that whole thing fell through, because it just would have been so interesting with you, and he just talking about the same subject, that he could have brought up things from you, and you could have brought up things that he didn't think of, and bring it back to memory.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this much. Riley, he broke a lot of ice. Indeed, I would not have come out of the woodwork if it wasn't for the fact that there were so many things that were parallel to my experience, and the fact that he, in fact, matched the character that I met there. And indeed, there was Riley there. I did meet him there in the New Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. But Riley only went to a certain level. He wasn't able to ascend as high. I guess he wasn't ready to receive. And that's just the way it works. We don't, you know, take our progress up the higher destiny, in stages, like going to school and passing our grades, finally getting a diploma or whatever. Mm-hmm. There is in terms of the Bible, an idea of a new name, which is like a diploma, a new personality that can be achieved. And but that's a book written in the Book of Revelation, and a white stone given with a new name on it that no man can understand except you, the one who receives it. And that is because of the fact that one has progressed past so many different levels of experience. But his levels remain a certain one, ones which are important to the interface of, you might say, the biologic man, to the fact that there is others of physical reality out there, material beings, aliens, sentient, friendly, others that may be kind of crazy, others who had different types of ways of expressing life purpose. And not all of those were given to me, because ultimately my question was order, was God. His question, it was no question, except his character question running around, which is a Morancho gift of, you might say, a type of personality that helped him maintain a relationship with, I guess, the level of reality that he had encountered. So anyway, that's just a little bit of the idea of Riley Martin. As far as I was able to know him, and not as well as you, Curtis, who got to know him on his very raw and perhaps very coarse human level, mm-hmm. might say the street fighter level, bare knuckle mm-hmm. fighter. I also got to see him as a bare knuckle fighter a little bit, but that was when they were wondering if I wanted to fight. They were measuring. In the entire time I was there in the New Jerusalem, they were measuring my my place. They were looking where to place me, because learning for them is to be able to give the person what they want at the time they need it. So if a person, and you can give them higher truth, and they don't want it, they'll never receive it, even if it's put right in front of them. So this is something that allowed me to ascend, even to the point of having at least one question answered by a Verandadic Most High Observer, which is darn high up the scale of celestial beings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway...
All right.
So I got to go.
Yeah, you got to go pick up your daughter.
Yeah.
At where? Kahului?
Kahului Airport, yeah. Okay.
Kahului Airport. Well, thank you for recording with us, and we'll catch up to you next Tuesday.
Okay. Aloha.
All right. Aloha, Michael.